Hey, Sound Opinions listeners, if you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll be sharing our favorite songs about babies and raising children. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, let's review new music from Taylor Swift with music critic Kristen Stahlke. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island since 1988. Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find 312 Wheat Ale, Big Juicy Beer Hug, and so many other limited releases at either of Goose's locations in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This is such a big album. 31 songs, 2 hours, major pop culture moment, Greg, that we thought we would turn to Sound Opinions official Taylor Swift correspondent, Kristen Stahlke. Hey, Kristen, welcome back to Sound Opinions.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're big fans of yours. You've changed the name of your blog now. It's Staged Haze. Used to be Chicago Haze. We had you on way back, episode 791, and then we thought we had a lot to deal with. We were dealing with the twofer of Folklore and Evermore, chatting about Tay-Tay's doings at that time. And now, with Beyoncé, the biggest force in popular music today. So we've all, the three of us, been living with it for a week. You know, you just dropped your review a day ago, and, you know, the headline kind of says it all. I read it with great interest. I thought it was one of the best and most insightful takes out there. The chaos, confusion, and conflicting nature of Taylor Swift's 11th album, The Tortured Poets Department. So you like parts of it, and parts of it leave you cold, Kristen. And you
That's exact, yes, with
the proviso that you have been a Taylor uber fan for 15 years.
Yes, it has been half of my life that I've been following this person's career, which is really crazy to say out loud. And I think I touched on this the last time we talked, but I just find it to be really important that if you admire someone's music or their artistry, that you give yourself the space to also critique it. And I think considering how much music she's dropped in the last several years, I think it's like almost 200 songs since Folklore came out, which is an insane number. I don't know how anyone can consume her music and not, you know, feel some type of criticism. It's hard for us to listen to it just once or twice and take it at face value. I think we have to really, you know, go a little bit deeper. And I think, at least for me, that's just a really fun thing that I feel like I reserve specifically for her music. And just the fact that this album came out 6 days ago, and like I have people who are casual fans who don't really care about her, who love her as much as I do, like talking to me about it and want my opinion and just want to discuss it. I think that she really pushes that sort of conversation that a lot of artists don't do.
You know, you parse Taylor's lyrics like a Dylanologist would parse the latest from Bob Dylan. And the cultural moment can only be compared to something like the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
You know, I had a student in class the other day who was saying, man, Taylor fatigue. And this was a Taylor uber fan, super fan like you, right? I'm just fatigued because I think it's been 8 albums, and then of course the Eras tour, the biggest grossing tour of all time, and then the movie of the Eras mm-hmm. tour, and then every week on NFL.
Yeah, right? Super Bowl. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I said, hey, the Beatles had movies, they had mm-hmm. cartoons, they had albums, they had tours, right? You know, this isn't a Gen X branding corporate thing. This has always been part of pop culture.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think you have to look at it from at least I question it. Like, is it because she's a woman and she's been able to break all of these records and she has entered into a space when it comes to like the NFL stuff? And that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, right.
But I definitely think you have to look at it in that way. And she's kind of discussed that throughout her career, I would say in the latter years, about, you know, why am I critiqued in these ways? Is it because I'm a woman and I'm successful and I'm confident? Again, I don't feel like a lot of the critiques I've read about this album have like taken that out of it. And I kind of question if she's gotten to a point in her career and just in popular culture, if you're able to separate those things anymore.
Kristen, my thoughts are that there's so much of it and there's so little time to process it because of the nature of social media and the need to have a take on something almost immediately after it hits our ears, that the music itself doesn't really have a chance to resonate the way it might, for better or worse. I mean, it could be the greatest album of all time, but how are we going to know that, you know, after listening to 31 tracks one time?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And again, that's kind of why I tried to take more time to digest it and really see how I feel. And to go on your point with like, the social media of it all, like having to put your opinion out there as quickly as possible. I think that there's been like a lot of interesting discourse around Taylor over the last year or so, where like people who don't even care to follow her or listen to her music have the desire to comment on things as well. And I've seen a lot of people like pointing out the more questionable or lighthearted or goofy lyrics from this album that you can take out of context and just like slap it on Twitter and, you know, post something and like laugh at it. And that also takes away from it because people are just wanting to, you know, have their opinion go viral and they don't really care if it's like, you know, an opinion given with context. And I think that's just like another thing that makes, you know, sharing your opinion or giving yourself the time to really process things difficult. You left your typewriter at my apartment, straight from the tortured poet's department. I think some things I never say, like who uses typewriters anyway. But I want to start with the title track, because I just think it's amazing. And I think you make the point in your review that the album should have started with that, right? Mm-hmm.
The reason I think it's so striking is it's Taylor in self-deprecating mode, right? You make the point, and it's undeniable. You know, she has not been an anonymous person. She's been one of the most famous people in the world since age 17, and now she is 34. And, you know, there are expectations of great artistry, and other people just, you know, it's just commerce. And here is the chorus of, you're not Dylan Thomas, I'm not Patti Smith, this ain't the Chelsea Hotel, we're modern idiots. I laughed in your face and said, you're not Dylan Thomas, I'm not Patti Smith, this ain't the Chelsea Hotel, we're modern idiots. And who's gonna hold you? You know, and I love that humor. I wish there was more of it.
I agree.
How did you read that?
I interpreted it the same exact way you do. And when I've written about her in the past, I've really emphasized that I prefer when she writes more self-deprecating lyrics. I think songs like Antihero or The Archer, where she is really taking a look at herself, and whether it's, you know, very clear to the listener, you have to do some like inferring. To me, when she's self-deprecating, I just feel like she's a lot more honest and it's very relatable. So I agree with you. I feel like there is an unfortunate reality along that chorus specifically, that a lot of people listening to that song don't know who those people are. So they won't like connect with it with that humor in the sense that like you or I do. So
I've seen some pieces online that like searches for Patti Smith and mm-hmm. Dylan Thomas have exploded, mm-hmm. and Patti Smith herself weighed in.
Yeah.
Thank you, Taylor.
mm-hmm. At what point do we lose value mm-hmm. versus the quantity exceeds the quality. You know, this is like workaholic on steroids behavior.
It's not healthy. Yeah,
I admire her. She's a pro. She works really hard. There's no doubt about that. But I'm just wondering, you know, do the songs, could they be better if she'd taken a little bit more time to craft this record? Because I see songs on this record that I really like. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think it's tough to wade through those 31 songs. Mm-hmm. You know, time after time, because there is, let's face it, there's filler on this record.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Florida. It's one hell of a drug. I was like, that's all you got to say about Florida. Florida is one hell of a drug. Florida.
That has the advantage of being the first upbeat, high-energy track on the record, and it's eight songs in. I'm curious about what you think about her view of herself as an artist. Do I really need to do this way? I mean, what is it about her that makes her want to do it this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things to unpack with that question, but for starters, I've also been a critique of her editing skills over the last few albums, so I definitely understand questioning, like, did we really need all of these songs? Like, was there no one in the room with her telling her, like, these aren't good enough, these aren't on par the rest of the songs? And this is something I struggle with too, because I do think she should have cut like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 songs off of this record. But at the same time, the way that I'm interpreting it is like, she needed to create this body of work and just like get it out, process it, like emotionally, mentally, release it and be done with it. Like, I think she says that in the last song, the manuscript, like, this is over, like, this is a closed chapter, I'm done with this now. So I feel like it was a conscious decision from her end to just release everything. Maybe I'm giving her too much credit with that. And again, back to like, I've always said she needs more work in like the editing department. But at the same time, I just feel like it was more of like an emotional choice. But I also think she's very much aware that her fans are going to listen to every single thing she puts out, and she can put out 50 songs and they're still going to react in the way that they did. The fans are insatiable at this point.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know. I think both of those things can be true.
I would say my criticisms are too much of the sameness, like Greg said, especially when you get to anthology and the piano ballads. Mm-hmm. Mid-tempo, down-tempo, not uber melodic. And, man, you're 34. You've had some heartbreak. Who among us has not? You know, it's like, what else have you got to talk about, Taylor? Mm. You're a fascinating, brilliant woman. Tell me about the weather, for God's sake. Anything besides the men who done you wrong. You're one of the strongest women in the world today, and you continually define yourself by bad boys. Tell me why I'm wrong, Kristen. Obviously, I'm a boy, so...
I feel like my answer is going to either, like, start a riot or people will, like, you know, be on my side. So this is a hard thing to answer.
But that's why we love you. You're super honest. And while I love your review and it did really dive deep, you're still telling us, I'm not even going to name the boys who done her wrong, because who cares? She should exist in her own world without defining herself by men.
I think she exists in her own world and wants to write about them. I don't think she feels defined by them. I think that they give her the most material to write about. But I agree with you, like, she has released songs in her career that aren't related to like romantic relationships at all. And I find them to be very compelling. So
yeah, when she was taking on characters and telling folk tales.
Folklore and Evermore were turning point records, and I was thinking she's really blossoming as an artist. But to Jim's point, I think that there are an awful lot of songs about relationships. And a lot of the discourse, Kristen, is about who's this song about.
Uh-huh.
Is it the guy from 1975? Is it the British actor?
Yep.
Is it Travis Kelce, the Kansas City Chiefs tight end? You know, it's just ridiculous kind of conversations. I mean, not ridiculous. It's just kind of like there's a lot of time spent sussing that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel there's, as Jim said, there's more that she has to say.
Yeah, I mean, we knew.
Or
who,
I think
you
she
know,
does.
Joni Mitchell was part of the Laurel Canyon scene,
yeah.
And all those people are falling in love and then breaking each other's heart. And it's all interesting 30 years later when you read the books.
Yeah.
But man, those Joni Mitchell songs stand as immortal, even if you don't know who she was with at any given time.
Right.
And that's how I think it should be. I don't want to know the trivia about Taylor. I want to listen to her and be moved by the music. And a third of this does, but two-thirds doesn't.
I tend to agree with you on that, but I also pose the question, like, is that her doing, or is that because we are so fixated on, like, celebrity and, you know, following people online and seeing what they're doing and seeing like relationships and like, are you guys familiar with like Dumois, like the blind items and the gossip? Like, is that, I don't know. I feel like we have to critique the bigger picture, or it's not just entirely like on her, if that makes sense.
I feel like in my rant, I cut you off earlier, Kristen. You were getting to a moment of crystalline honesty. I could tell because you were afraid to say what you were going to say. Ray, you know, what else have you got? You know, it's wrong to compare artists for the most part, but we have had these two extraordinary cultural explosions in the last month. Beyonce going back deep to the roots of African Americans in country music and talking about many things, right? Maybe there's a reference to Jay here or there, right? But so what do you think? If you had your druthers, would we get a Taylor that talks about something besides her relationships?
Yeah, but we have had that. So
yeah.
I don't necessarily like assume that anything she releases here on out is going to be anything other than what's currently going on in her life. So I feel like I can't fault her for like she. And obviously, I'm speaking like I know her. I don't know her. I have no connection towards her other than loving her music. But like, it seems like she had a really difficult time coming to terms with the demise of a really long relationship. And then all of a sudden, once that was over, she was swept off her feet by this person who's been in and out of her life for the last 10 years. Like, if that's true, I like accept the music that she's giving us, because to me, it's authentic to what's going on in her life. I guess it's up to people if they care enough to listen to it.
Yeah, I buy that. I mean, she's being authentic to herself is what you're saying. And that's all you can ask of an artist.
Well, and that's why she registers with people. Everybody
is heartbreak. And they resonate. That honesty resonates. What about the... there was one phrase that was quoted that I read, the Swiftenoff bubble. Jack Antonoff and Taylor Swift. Jack Antonoff has now worked on over 100 songs with Taylor over the last decade. He's basically a go-to guy number one when it comes to a producer, a collaborator,
yep.
a co-songwriter. I'm going to be flat out honest here. I thought a lot of the Antonoff stuff was pretty boring. The first album that was the album proper, a lot of samey tempos, not the big hooks that you're hoping for that she's, you know, capable of writing. The Aaron Dessner stuff was way more appealing to me. I thought the second half, you know, if you get the anthology part two, the songs that a lot of critics dismissed as like superfluous, I thought that's where the real pop music innovation was going on. I thought that's where her music was progressing in a way that I thought was interesting, at least. Way more interesting to me than the Antonoff production. But I know you loved some of the Antonoff stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I definitely see the criticisms that their relationship as collaborators has probably run its course. And if, you know, next album, if we even get another album in the next couple of years, if it is announced that she's not working with Antonoff, I will be excited solely because I would like to know how it's going to sound and what changes she's going to make sonically. But I still feel like songs that they did work on together, not all of them, but the ones that really hit for me, like if it's not broke, don't fix it sort of mentality. And for me personally, like when Antonoff and Swift have worked together in the past. The songs like Getaway Car or Out of the Woods or like Cruel Summer stand out to me as like some of my favorites from those albums. And I feel like those sounds are like primarily what she's living in the first few off of this album. So like as a personal preference, I'm happy with it, but I definitely see that she should probably like branch out and try something new.
There is some Dessner music that you do like on this record, right, Kristen? What in particular?
Well, the song that when I first went through my listen of this album, the first five tracks I feel sonically are fairly similar. And then all of a sudden we jump to like this country old Taylor infused song with But Daddy, I Love Him. And the first listen, I was so caught off guard. I was not expecting to hear that from her on this album at all. And it took me like multiple listens to fully grasp what she was saying. And it's also almost 6 minutes long. I think it's the longest song on the project. But I feel like that song is like the most quintessential old Taylor, like fused with new Taylor. And I really do think it's like one of the best songs she's put out in a few years. I will die on that hill. I think it's probably the best song on this album. And I could talk about it forever.
What is it about for you as a listener, and what do you love about it that you could talk about it forever?
I feel like, first off, from the title alone, I was not expecting it to sound the way it did. So going into it and just the fact that it sounds so different after the first five, I was not anticipating it. But like I mentioned before, I feel like it's so old Taylor Swift. It's kind of like, I think I wrote something in my review. It's like Love Story's older sister who's like gone through more trauma than like Taylor did when she wrote Love Story. Yeah, I just feel like it has such an interesting fuse of talking about how like the people in her life aren't happy with the person she's with, but then also on a bigger scale, like there's a million people watching and like feel like they have something to say about who she wants to be with.
God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me, sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see.
It's very similar to Love Story, and I just love the way it builds. I love the chord progression. I love the melody. I love that I hear old Taylor in it, but I also feel like how she's been able to improve her songwriting and kind of make it a little bit more pop and more like commercially interesting. I don't want to say interesting, but you know, like commercially receptive, I guess. I just think she like nailed it on all fronts with that song.
We have been talking to Kristen Stahlke, the author and editor of Staged Haze, a great music blog, with a great review of the record we just talked about. Kristen, thanks for returning to Sound Opinions to talk about Taylor Swift.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
Well, that is what Greg, myself, and Kristen thought of the new music from Taylor Swift. But now we want to hear from you. What did you make of these 31 songs and 2 hours of music? Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. When we come back, we're going to share our favorite songs about babies on Sound Opinions.
The who's who.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in and inspired by Chicago. They got 312 Wheat Ale, Hazy Beer Hug, and many more one-off beers at the Fulton Street Tap Room or their new Salt Shed Pub. The perfect place to go before a show at the Salt Shed. Me and Andrew were there on opening night, Greg. Mm-hmm. It was really exciting. You had Rocky Mountain spotted fever, tick fever. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, every time we go to one of these goose joints, there's another new one to try, and we love them all.
I'm a fan. In addition to making great products and event spaces, Goose Island has always been a supporter of music culture in Chicago and nationwide. I mean, if you see that Goose Island logo at a venue or a restaurant, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah, we are proud to be associated with Goose Island. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer, and Sound Opinions is. Sound Opinions is brought to you by NordVPN. NordVPN is the gateway to secure and private access to the internet. We all need that. And it works by enveloping all of your online activities in a layer of encryption while also hiding information about your virtual location. Greg, before I had a VPN, I was sitting in a doctor's waiting room, and boy, did I get hammered with a virus. I mean, I'd go to the doctor and get rid of a virus.
Well, safety from viruses is one of the great uses of NordVPN. It's an incredible tool. It's easy to use. You can connect with just one click and enjoy the amazing speed on every major platform, from Windows to iOS to Android. Now, this summer, I'll be doing some traveling.
You're going overseas.
This is a necessity. You know, you've got to use this. I know I can count on NordVPN to help me easily access secure connections on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere I go. You know, it's easy to get hacked these days, right?
Yep.
This will help. It also makes it easy to access paid subscriptions to streaming services and content, even if it's not available in the country I'm in.
So you can watch your Netflix while you're sunning it in Europe.
Absolutely.
If you want safe access to your favorite streams, social media, and more, no matter where you are, get an exclusive NordVPN deal here at nordvpn.com/soundopinions. nordvpn.com/soundopinions. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link's in the description of this episode.
And we're back. In honor of our producer, Alex Claiborne, who is pregnant and due any day now, we wanted to talk about some of our favorite songs about babies and raising children.
Yes, Alex is going to be a great mom. I have every confidence in this. She's mothers, you and me, Greg, for goodness sake. And you have two daughters. I have a daughter. Producer Andrew has a kid. We know about parenting and music, and we love them both. So I guess I'm going to get us rolling. And it's a bit of a sequel, continuation, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
I know we just did a classic album dissection of Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy, Brian Eno's second solo album, the one from 1974. But, you know, as soon as we were mulling over songs about babies that we love, I didn't get to go in depth on this one when we tackled Eno. Put a Straw Under Baby.
Yeah.
What a beautiful song, right? Put a Straw Under Baby, your good deed for the day. Put a Straw Under Baby, keep the splinters away. There's something about, like, you know, the baby and the manger and the, you know, caring for the kid in this sort of ugly circumstances. It also has always reminded me, because of the rest of the lyrics, of like a dank, dark, medieval convent where someone left this child. But that's the beauty of Eno, right? They're completely open-ended, these songs. They're about what you want them to be about. There's the word baby in it. Babies need to go to sleep. Brian Eno's helping them, and it's a beautiful melody to boot.
Put a straw under baby, you're good.
Brian Eno, put a straw under baby. And now I'll put like a 6-month moratorium. 9 month, given our topic.
All right.
9 month moratorium on more Eno.
All right, we're going to see if you can stick to that. I am betting against it. My first baby song, Jim, is one from Jimi Hendrix, one that was never officially released in his lifetime. But one of those tracks that I think is one of his very best. He was preparing it for his what was going to be his fourth studio album, which never actually was officially released. Of course, variations of it have been bootlegged numerous times. This one surfaced in 1971. It was actually the first official attempt at putting together what Hendrix had in mind for his fourth studio album. And this was the song that was destined to end that record, his survivors claimed, Belly Button Window.
Mm.
Evocative title, written from the perspective of a fetus in its mother's womb. I don't think I've ever heard a song quite like that. You know, peering out at the world that awaits them, and they're basically saying, what kind of world am I about to enter into? This is the time of the Vietnam War and civil rights protests and political assassinations. And here's Hendrix commenting, and I swear I see nothing but a lot of frowns, and I'm wondering if they want me. You know, do I really want to go out there?
Yeah.
Very powerful song, introspective, and you kind of wonder where Hendrix's head was at at this point in his life, and it portends a very dark future. Jimi Hendrix with Belly Button Window from 1971, when it was officially released on Sound Opinions.
Well, I'm looking out my belly button window, and I see a whole lot of frowns. And I'm wondering if they don't want me around.
That's Hendrix, Belly Button Window. Wow. Different take on the baby perspective, I'd say.
As befits Hendrix.
Yeah.
We're going to turn to producer Andrew now. Andrew, how's Albie doing?
Oh, doing great. But, you know, as a fellow parent already, I've gone through the transformative experience that becoming a parent is, you know. And I know firsthand that being a parent can, like, just changes the way your brain works sometimes. It can turn, like, the most hardened cynic into a blubbering softy, you know? You can get very sentimental at moments.
Part of it is sleep deprivation in those early...
that for sure, yeah.
Your brain turns to jello.
Yeah.
But so for my pick, I turned to a country artist named Adeem the Artist, who is from Nashville. And this is actually a brand new song. The album is just out. It's called Anniversaries. And this song is called Rotations. And it's just about the existential mindset you get into where you think about, like, how long will I have with this child that I've brought into the world? Mm. How many days? You know, there's a lot of country songs that kind of deal with this topic. But I thought this one was really good. And, you know, it's just completely going straight for the jugular, just trying to make you cry, you know, just
tear jerking.
Yeah, no bones about it. It's just going straight for the sentimental, sleep deprived parent vibe. So here it is, Adeem the Artist with Rotations.
How many rotations am I gonna get with you? Share with you the wisdom and magic spells I have accrued. All the laughter and the longing.
Great pick from Andrew Gill, Adeem the Artist, Rotations. Now let's turn to our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo.
Hello. The baby song that I chose this time around was Todo Cambio by Camila. It's a song that I heard a lot growing up, and my parents would play it all the time, or it would just come on the radio, honestly, when we would listen to the radio. And it was just one of those songs that even as a kid, it made me cry. And even now as an adult, like, I'll watch the music video and it's like the most cringy music video you've ever seen, but it's so good. The song, you can read the English translation if you want. It basically translates perfectly. But basically, the whole song is about having to deal with the responsibility of becoming a parent, or just feeling that pressure of, like, oh, I'm going to be a parent soon. That's terrifying. And then when you finally have your baby or have your child, everything changes when you see them and you feel that, like, unconditional love for the first time, and you just sort of look at them and you're like, wow, everything changed when I saw you. And that's literally the translation of the song, just everything changed. And so, yeah, that's what I chose this time around. I got pretty emotional with it. Alex's pick is also gonna make you pretty emotional. It made me pretty emotional because I was like, dang, I wish I thought of that. But I'm really jealous that Alex got to it first. But that's okay. That's okay. I like my pick too. But here is Todo Cambio by Camila. And I hope you like it.
Antes que pasen más tiempo contigo, amor, tengo que decir que eres el amor de mi vida. Antes que te ame más, escucha por favor. Déjame decir que todo te di. Y no hay cómo explicar.
That was Sol's pick, Camila, Todo Cambio. Greg, I'm gonna start this next one of mine with a story that you, for years, anybody in your circle of, dare I say, friends, you recommended this book by a local pediatrician. And the number one takeaway, this entire book could be boiled down to the following advice, which everybody you passed it on to would then pass it on to everyone else. I'm passing it on to Alex. Alex,
yes.
Never wake a sleeping baby. All right? If they want to sleep from noon to 4 p.m., you got to let them do that. And then eventually they will get on something resembling a clock like your own. You know, you sleep at night and get up in the day. But, you know, grandma's coming over or whatever it is, and they want to see the baby. No, 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 no. Never wake a sleeping baby. That is not the advice David Byrne gives in the song Stay Up Late. Little Creatures, an outlier in the Talking Heads discography, is their sixth studio album. Weird. Weird from the cover, which was, you know, outsider artist Howard Finster, to the steel guitar suddenly permeating Talking Heads. It's not like they went country, because they're still Talking Heads and David Byrne.
Yeah.
But what a bizarre gonzo song Stay Up Late is. Mommy had a little baby. There he is, fast asleep. He's just a little plaything. Why not wake him up?
Mm.
Why not, David?
Mm, yeah.
Never wake a sleeping baby. Hang it in every room of your house, Alex. That's the best advice. And then, sure enough, Melody, after it was like 2 months, and then like was regular, sleeping 8 hours a day, because I never woke her up.
Mm.
David Byrne with bad advice, although to hear Byrne actually being vulnerable, I mean, you know, Mr. Psycho Killer, Mr. Artiste, once removed from humanity, right?
Right.
To hear him talking, because some of the lines I'm not going to repeat, it's amazing this song kind of got mainstream radio play for so long. But, you know, he's loving playing with the little baby.
You don't picture David Byrne playing with babies, do you? But,
no.
There you go. The book, by the way, Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child, Dr. Weisbluth, was our Bible, and it's been the Bible of many young parents for decades, actually. So
there you go. There's free plug
happy,
for Dr. Weisbluth.
Happy to recommend that book to anybody who needs it. Speaking of babies, Joni Mitchell wrote a terrific song about a baby. Little Green was a deeply personal song that Mitchell wrote about the daughter she gave up for adoption.
Mm.
Soon after her daughter was born in 1966, she was a destitute artist living in Toronto. She had no money. She was a single mom, trying to make a go as a folk singer, wasn't catching on yet, had no ability to raise a child, and put the papers up for adoption for her daughter. She was later reunited with her daughter in the 90s. It was a very very much under-the-table kind of story, as well as the song. What does the song really mean? What is it about? Joni didn't talk about it in very frank terms at all until she was reunited with the child she gave up for adoption. And, you know, was very happy to have that reunion. But it's a very poignant song, told from the perspective of a parent who did what they felt was the right thing for their child at that time in their life. And, of course, it was difficult letting go, but in retrospect, Joni did the right thing for her daughter at the time. She was unable to take care of that child. Ended up on the Blue album in 1971, Little Green from Joni Mitchell on Sound Opinions.
Born with the moon in Cancer, choose her a name she will answer to. Call her Green, and the winters cannot fade her. Call her Green for the children who've made her little.
A great pick from Mr. Cott, Little Green by Joni Mitchell. Coming up, more of our favorite tracks about babies on Sound Opinions.
To my unborn child.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. We're sharing our favorite songs about babies. Jim, you're next.
I'm going with another classic. You did Joni Mitchell. I'm going with Stevie Wonder. A tune that opens side three of Songs in the Key of Life. Isn't She Lovely? Some people think it's Stevie at his cheesiest. I don't think there's bad Stevie. You know, I really don't. It's so heartfelt. And then, you know, you actually have the sound of him bathing his daughter. Is a little older. He's singing about a really young baby. He's giving his daughter a bath, and that's mixed in with this harmonica solo. Mm. And how can you not love it, right? And Stevie's way with a hook. I never stopped to think about the lyrics, though, until I was prepping, talking about, isn't she lovely? Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she precious? I'm 100% with you, Steve, okay? Less than a minute old. All right, I'm going to tell you, and Alex, another piece of parental advice, right? You know, when the baby is a minute old, they do this thing, they, like, take it over to the scrub station, and it's like they're scrubbing a chicken that they're going to put on the rotisserie. Burned into my memory, glimpse of my daughter for the first time was like, this is like how they treat a Purdue chicken. I'm Stevie Wonder, isn't she lovely? Stevie Wonder, isn't she lovely?
Let's go to our producer, Max Hatlam, for the next pick.
So I had to go a little outside of my regular genres for this one. I couldn't think of too many punk or stoner metal songs about babies, at least not nice ones. And I wanted to have something nice. So I went with Golden Slumbers by the Beatles off of Abbey Road. I actually do love the Beatles quite a bit. I don't think I've talked about that on the show before. So this isn't the most out there pick for me in that sense. It's the tie-in or kind of the intro for Carry That Weight, which I think is definitely the more popular of the two songs. But I actually like this one a bit better just because it's like this short and sweet, less than 2 minute encapsulation of a lot of what I like about Abbey Road. You also get some really great McCartney singing on it, kind of a heavier soulful McCartney. But yeah, the music I think really encapsulates the stripped down rock band that the Beatles could be with just the four of them playing, but then also the studio experimenters, especially in that era when using like these big orchestral strings in your songs were getting more popular and there was a lot more accessibility to that kind of stuff in the studio. It's just a simple lullaby, but I think it kind of gets at the joy and innocence of the relationship between a baby and their parents. So I hope this is a good song for the occasion. Alex, I hope you enjoy this one specifically, and congratulations.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby.
That was Max Hatlam with a great pick, The Beatles' Golden Slumbers. Can't go wrong with that song. Nice pick, Max. I'm going to go to Loretta Lynn. You can always count on Loretta to write songs about domesticity in a very intriguing way. She didn't actually write this song. It was written by Shel Silverstein, but her recording of it really turned it into a hit. She owned it. And it really paved the way for her career in the 70s, where she really became much more outspoken in her music, not that she wasn't before, but even more outspoken about what it was like to be a mom, what it was like to be a wife, and in a society which was some caught between the rise of feminism and traditionalism, especially in the South, where Loretta was born and raised. The song I'm going to play, "One's on the Way." I just love this song because Loretta Lynn puts her own spin on it. There's an element of humor here. But she's talking about taking care of a household packed with kids and possibly two more, one or two more on the way. She's not sure. She may have twins. And she's commenting with a kind of bemused attitude about the lifestyles of the rich and famous in a world that she knows nothing about this world. She says, what's going on here with Elizabeth Taylor flying all the way to France to get her hair done, and Jackie going to a discotheque to get to learn a brand new dance, Jackie Onassis.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just kind of like, this.
That ain't her life.
That's another world. And instead of, there's not an envy there, there's almost like a bemused attitude, like, okay, that's their idea of a good life, I'm living mine, and kind of owning it. Loretta Lynn, "One's on the Way" on Sound Opinions.
They say to have her hair done, Liz flies all the way to France, and Jackie's seen in a discotheque doing a brand new dance, and the White House social season should be glittering and gay, but here in Topeka the rain is a-falling, the faucet is a-dripping, and the kids are a-balling. One of them a-toddling, and one is a-crawling, and one's on the way.
That is the great Loretta Lynn. "One's on the Way" is the name of the song. Now, the lady of the moment, producer Alex Claiborne.
Mom-to-be.
Soon to be a mom. Alex, I'm sure you thought long and hard. You gotta pick one song about having a baby. What's it gonna be?
Hey guys, it's me, the woman of the hour. No, the song I wanted to do, I wanted to make everyone cry listening to Sound Opinions. So I decided to choose the Phil Collins song "You'll Be in My Heart" from the 1999 Disney film Tarzan. And he was initially hired by Disney to do as more of like for his drumming acumen, because they wanted like jungle beats, and obviously Phil Collins, one of the most prolific drummers of all time. And he decided that, you know, when writing this song, You'll Be in My Heart, to write it from the perspective of thinking of his daughter, Lily, who was 10 at the time. You might know Lily now from her role in Emily in Paris. She's an actor. But, you know, writing this very gentle and loving and protective song. And the song did win the Golden Globe and the Oscar for Best Original Song. And I think with good reason, because, you know, it really is so touching and beautiful. And, you know, I wrote, the reason I picked this song is because it is emotional, you know, lyrically, sonically, and I just wanted to make everyone cry while driving to work. So, but that's the song I chose. It's You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins.
This bond between us can't be broken. I will be here, don't you?
Alex's pick, You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins. Can't go wrong with Phil Collins. Well, there's some bad
Phil Collins. You
can go
wrong with
but
Phil
that's
Collins.
A, yeah, you can. All
but
right.
That's a sweet
song. I love Phil Collins. So, you know, he played with Brian Eno.
Well, you
never mind.
You said you weren't going to mention Eno for 6 months, and within minutes, you've already violated that.
I am, and I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it again. Howie B, Music for Babies, is one of my favorite albums from the mid-90s that straddles the turf between the slower end of trip-hop and old-fashioned Eno-like ambient music. Howard Simon Bernstein of Scotland took more than a few notes from Eno. When I first talked to him, this album had just come out, and the year before he had engineered Bjork's Post record, one of my favorites by her. He had this solo record, Music for Babies, inspired by the birth of his child, and he had this Passengers collaboration coming out, right, with Eno and the members of U2 who weren't Bono. And, you know, it's an instrumental record allegedly inspired by the birth of his child, as I said. And it's special to me because I had one of those publicist setup things, right? I had just been fired from Rolling Stone. I'm freelancing from Minnesota. It's minus 25 degrees. I'm watching Melody, who is a toddler in that like spinning saucer.
Right.
And
right.
You stick them in there, right? And hours of endless fun, right? And so I had this great conversation with Howie B about production and about, you know, Bjork and about Passengers. And then I got, I think it was The Edge, right? Okay, what's this Passengers record about? And Melody discovered that the purple puppy head that was on this spinning saucer made this squeak, squeak sound. And the entire time I'm talking to one of the most famous musicians in the world, she's going squeak, 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 squeak in my office, right? You know, The Edge was nice enough not to say anything about it. Maybe he thought I was like making ambient music myself, but I'm never going to forget that. I don't think Melody remembers, but Music for Babies by Howie B, the title track.
Music for Babies, Howie B, the theme of the show today. And I am going to play another classic baby song. I think maybe the best of them all in some ways, at least in my personal pantheon, because of what represented in Lauryn Hill's life. Her great solo album in 1998, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. A lot going on in her life at the time. The Fugees were a huge group. She wanted to make this solo record. She had things to say, clearly. She basically wrote and produced the entire album herself. she was inspired by the music and culture of Jamaica. She had had a child with Rohan Marley, the son of Bob Marley. The child was born in Zion, was the name of the child, August 1997, a few months before the album was released. And she wrote this song about her child because she was going through some stuff. She was basically being told by powers that be that maybe this isn't such a good move for you, having a child now. Really? You're just starting your solo career. You really want to have a baby? And she said, yeah, I really want to have this baby. There's a verse in the song, I knew his life deserved a chance, but everybody told me to be smart. Look at your career, they said. Lauren, baby, use your head. But instead, I chose to use my heart. A beautiful song, tribute to her son, Lauryn Hill, to Zion on Sound Opinions.
Oh, this crazy circumstance, I knew his life deserved a chance, but everybody told me to be smart. Look at your career, they said, Lauryn, baby, use your head. But instead I chose to use my heart. Now the joy of my world is in Zion.
Lauryn Hill, to Zion. And that wraps up our lists of favorite baby songs. But as always, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message on our website, soundopinions.org, and tell us your pick for a great baby song. Mr. Cott, what is on the show next week?
Jim, very excited to welcome back Mary Timoney to the show for an in-depth interview on her career and her latest record, a solo record that highlights what a brilliant songwriter and guitarist she has always been. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Max Hatlam, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.